Blog Talk Radio.
We are all one planet, all one people of Earth, all one planet, sharing our living, our dying, our birth, and we won't stand by watching her die.
Welcome to Your Turn to Speak with your host, Beth Miller. All points of view must be brought to light if we're to reach the wisest solutions to challenges we face. Guests on Your Turn to Speak have unusual insights to bring to the collective conversation. They have been invited because of the positive impact of their loving presence on Earth. Though their ideas may be hidden by the glare of the mainstream focus, their perspectives are guaranteed to inspire and enrich us all. And now, here's your host, Beth Miller.
Welcome to Your Turn to Speak. I'm your host, Beth Miller. This evening's program is exceptionally special, since it is the very first Your Turn to Speak broadcast. Listeners, this is opening night, and I thank you all for tuning in. And as we begin, I'd also like to thank Molly Scott for her beautiful song, We Are All One Planet, which opened the curtains for tonight's dialogue. The premier guest of Your Turn to Speak is an extraordinary artist of life. And I say artist of life because woven through his creativity, there is evidence of his kindness, sensitivity, gentleness, and humor. He has written several songs, plays, short stories, two novelettes, and poems that have comforted and inspired those they have touched, while in many cases making them laugh. He is also the editor of Olive Trees, a literary periodical which gives many people, including those in prison, an opportunity to express themselves. This artist of life's name is Ron Van Ostrand. Ron Van Ostrand's creative gifts flow in many directions. He plays a number of instruments, guitar, mandolin, banjo, and drums. He teaches mandolin at Cayuga Community College in Auburn, New York. He performs in various venues in Central New York and the Finger Lakes region. In summers, Ron leads a music workshop aimed at enhancing self-esteem for children with different abilities at a place called Freedom Recreational Services. And he also uses his talents as a way of raising awareness of hunger and homelessness in the local community. Now, personally, I am a frequent participant in Ron's regularly scheduled sacred drumming circles, and I can honestly say they are transformational. Since the 70s, Ron has studied holistic healing practices and alternative healing techniques, beginning with lessons he received from herbal healers in the foothills of the Adirondack Mountains. He loves organic gardening and nature, and his family homestead, which he calls Olive Trees Meditational Gardens, sits atop a hill overlooking the beautiful Owasco Lake. It is there he lives with his beloved wife, Toni, and two cats. Ron's love of the earth and all life led to his involvement in the green movement. He ran for New York State Assembly in 1999 and has co-chaired the Cayuga County Green Party for a number of years. Ron is also a lifelong seeker of spiritual wisdom. He follows many traditions of the ancient order of the Essenes. He embraces the concepts of ceremony as taught by Native Americans Wolf, Moon Dance, and Sun Bear. And he does yoga as taught by Yogi Pranabhatmananda. He's also a certified Reiki practitioner. So it is with great honor and delight to present to you Ron Van Ostrand. Welcome, Ron. It's your turn to speak.
Well, thank you, Beth. I want to wish you well on this endeavor. I'm sure it will go far to opening the minds of people all over into different ways that people think and different ways that people interact to make the world a better place. Especially honored to be your first guest.
Oh, well, it's my delight that you are. I was wondering if we could begin by hearing some stories about your life that have kind of guided you towards becoming the person you are today. Like, would you be willing to share some of your earliest memories?
Yes, I would. I have a couple that are kind of funny and cannot really be substantiated. I mean, my earliest memory, I can almost remember just kind of being like hanging out, floating around all warm in darkness, and then all at once it was like the bottom dropped out, and I found myself in a room full of bright lights and was looking down where the remnant of my umbilical cord was taped with a piece of white tape. And I thought that was really strange at the time, so I went back to sleep, and I didn't have any other memories for a very long time until I was about four. And then a storm came through, and my mother was taking an old metal screen out of the window to shut it, and she was hit by lightning. And as she flew across the floor, she discharged a secondary hit on me and knocked me across the room.
Oh, my gosh.
So that was kind of interesting. And in my early life, I always felt like I kind of had a hard time fitting in with what was going on around me. I had a feeling that for some reason I was different. I was kind of shy, awkward, and uncoordinated. And just recently, as I have been doing more with my body, I'm learning that no one ever taught me how to walk, and I'm starting to learn body control now at a advanced age.
Wow.
But I've learned a lot in my lifetime, and I paid the price that many teenagers pay. And in fact, in an act of depravity and desperation, I bet a friend that I could drink a whole quart of vodka. Well, in some ways, I did win that bet, but I almost lost my life as it became entangled in barbed wire while I was trying to take a shortcut home. It was like 32 degrees below zero in the Adirondacks. And by the time that my friends kind of reported to the police that I had not showed up anywhere, I was pretty well frozen solid. And from what I understand, they couldn't even bend me to get me into the car.
Oh, my gosh.
Fortunately, there happened to be a doctor who had been in Alaska studying frostbite with the natives there. And he happened to be in the local hospital back from this sabbatical that he had taken. And he put me onto this regimen of just fasting. And for 2 weeks, I was just fed intravenously and kind of had to work out this being frozen thing. And I guess they also said that if I had not had as much alcohol in my body, I probably would have froze to death. Or if I hadn't slowed my body down by freezing, probably I would have died of alcohol poisoning. So I feel quite fortunate to be here.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing how, you know, things happen like that? You know, it's almost like for a reason, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it always amazes me that that doctor happened to be there at that time. Because back when this happened, I mean, they were rubbing butter on frostbite, and that was not working very well, I guess. And then as I got older, I had a really good friend, and we used to just take a lot of walks and discuss what was going on in the world, because I grew up in the 60s, which was a time when lots of things were changing. And
I'll say.
And so, So we used to talk about different ways that we could experiment, and we did things like lock ourselves away with our guitars and not eat for days or not sleep for days, and just to see what kind of effects, and record all our stuff on tapes. Unfortunately, the tapes did not survive all this time, but it was interesting when you put your body into, stress.
Yeah.
The different things that, the different ways that your mind works. You know, I can almost, see how there's different in Native American, how they go out into the wild for days. Mm-hmm. Or even the story of Jesus, how he goes to the mountain for 30 days and fasts and comes back with all this wisdom.
Right, right. There is something to that sort of, in a sense, fasting phenomenon or deprivation of sorts that kind of leads one to visions or...
Right, and actually the time in the hospital when I was... they would not give me anything for my pain, so I would have to go somewhere deep inside myself to make it so I could, function, because the pain of thawing out was probably the worst pain that I'd ever felt in my life.
Wow.
But from the time in my teenage years, I decided that I would rather be someone who sought wisdom than sought wealth. And so instead of taking the standard way of trying to fall into some slot and work towards my retirement, I decided I would open my mind and seek knowledge wherever I could find it. And I just recently read a book called The Witch of Portobello by Paulo Coelho.
Oh, yeah. I haven't heard about it. What does it say? What's its message?
Well, just the thing that I saw in there was about different archetypes, and I know that Carolyn Miss has a whole thing on archetypes, but this one had one of the archetype that seemed to fit me from this book was one who justifies their existence by going in search of complete and limitless pleasure, which was kind of what I did in my early years, and through a lot of adventures, I learned a lot of things, not always good lessons, but they were lessons that were meaningful for me. I mean, I won't say they weren't good lessons. I shouldn't say they weren't good lessons, but the way that I learned them probably could have been learned a lot easier in a different way.
Yeah. I see.
Yeah. And then in my early 80s, I became friends with my brother-in-law at the time, who his marriage ended, and he moved out to the Arizona, New Mexico area, and he started sending me articles and letters, and he brought back a great many books of different thought that I had never, encountered before, like Ken Kesey and, the Essenes and the Dead Sea Scrolls. I enjoyed their philosophy a lot and carry that with me to this day.
Wow. I was wondering if for our listeners who may not be familiar with the Essenes, could you tell us something about their beliefs, like especially the parts of their beliefs that particularly resonate with you?
Well, the one thing that you kind of attracted me to them or to their philosophy through these first letters and little quotes you sent me was that Jesus was referred to as the teacher of righteousness. He wasn't named Jesus in the Dead Sea Scrolls. It was referred to as the teacher of righteousness. And there was always a relationship of body, heart, and mind that he expressed, like your body is the chariot, your heart is the horse that pulls the chariot, and your mind is the driver. And you have to have all three of these things working at their optimal best, otherwise you don't go anywhere or go off course. Right. And then there was the part of the seven angels of the day and the seven angels of the night. So it kind of fit into the weeks. So like in the angels of the day are the angel of earth, the angel of life, the angel of joy, the angel of sun, the angel of water, the angel of air, and the angel of the earthly mother. And the angel of the evenings are the angel of eternal life, the angel of work, angel of peace, power, love, wisdom, and heavenly father. And there's also something in it that really resonates me, and that's the sevenfold peace. And it aligns with the chakra system, which I kind of discovered. But I discovered through reading. I'm sure I didn't discover it. But that, you know, with the first chakra is to be strong of body. Mm-hmm. And the second one is to be wise of mind. And the third one is pure of heart. And the fourth one is to build the kingdom. In other words, make the world a better place for yourself and for everyone around you.
Right.
And the next one is to speak the law, to speak, and law not meaning the law of man, but natural law, law of consequence, the law of nature itself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next one is to know the earthly mother, to know what's going on around you on this planet. And the last one is to seek the Father, or to seek the spiritual wisdom, to always seek that. And I found that to be the thing that resonated with me the most. There's a long reading in one of the Essene books, and you go through this sevenfold piece, and at the end you go of each segment, you go, you know this piece with the mind, desire this piece with the heart, and fulfill this piece with your body. And it had a great affinity for me, and I try to do that in my everyday life.
Right. It sounds so beautiful, especially the fact that it appears, you know, that it incorporates feminine aspects of the divine as well as the masculine. So it sounds like it's a very balanced-oriented as well, balance-oriented. Am I off base on that, or?
No, I think that's, you know, I found that the general Christian, per se, is so patriarchal.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, they don't even mention that the women had to the children during the first books of the Bible. They want you to, you know, it sounds like the men had all the children. I don't know. Maybe they did. I don't know. But, you know, they don't even mention the wives of the people, if there were wives. But, you know, I just always found that fascinating, how they would just leave women out.
Right.
As a being important at all. And I definitely believe that we should be balanced in our in our whole philosophy, you know, that I don't know.
Right, absolutely. Wow. The check is in the mail, Ron. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, in the introduction, I mentioned that you had an interest in holistic healing. I wonder if you could give us some insights into the healing techniques that have been helpful for you.
Well, when I was married to the person whose brother-in-law I was speaking of before, we lived in the Adirondacks, and we were relatively poor, I should say. We didn't have a lot of money. And one of the things we didn't have money for were doctors, so we would have to kind of medicate ourselves when we were sick. And so we would do that using different herbs and that were found in nature. And we bought at a garage sale a bunch of the Foxfire books. Are you familiar with those?
No, I'm not.
But they're a group of books that came out probably in the 70s, maybe late 60s. But it's all this lore from the Appalachians.
Oh, okay.
And so they had, like, herbal remedies. I mean, these books were from herbal remedies to building a violin, churning butter. I mean, they were really fascinating books. And so we started experimenting with a lot of the herbs and stuff like that for colds and flus and coughs. And I found it quite helpful, and I believe that it's that with herbs you can balance your body and you don't need the pharmaceuticals that most people subscribe to.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of our problems now are the amount of antibiotics that people use, and now germs are becoming totally immune to the antibiotics.
Yeah.
And antibiotics are in our water supply everywhere. And
yeah.
So I still do use a lot of herbs when I'm trying to get better. When Tony and I, Tony being the person that I'm married to, moved out to Geneseo, I went up to Rochester, and there was a store there called Herbal Life. And at that time, I just started the magazine that you mentioned before, or zine, I guess. It's not really a magazine. It's a lot smaller than a real magazine. And I went into the store, and it was an herbal medicine store, and I ended up getting the lady there to do a series in the olive trees on herbal medicine, and actually learned a lot from her at that
time. That's great. Now, do you grow some of these herbs now yourself in your garden?
Yeah, I have quite a few of them growing. I do gather a lot from the fields, though, just because it's a lot easier to pick them than grow sometimes.
Yeah, interesting.
But I have some mainstays, you know, like ginger, which really doesn't grow too well around here, which I use a lot for, you know, colds, mustard, comfrey, coltsfoot, and I'm sure there's several others, but they're escaping my mind currently.
Dude, echinacea, is that one of them?
Yeah, we grow echinacea.
Yeah.
I don't use it as much as I used to, and sometimes we become poisoned when we read things. And I read a study on the ineffectiveness of echinacea. And I just don't use it anymore. While before I read that, I used to think it was quite effective.
It's interesting, too, the power of our thoughts over the medicines we take. I know that sometimes I know of people who, before they even take any medicine, bless it in a sense and kind of affirm that this medicine will have benefits for me, you know, because there is that important component of our thoughts when we take any kind of medicine, wouldn't you think?
You know, the older that I get and the more that I look around, I think that our thoughts, and I think that people are discovering this worldwide, that our thoughts probably are the most instrumental in changing everything.
Yeah.
I think it's the negativity of our thoughts that sometimes affect everything around us. If we can stay positive, we don't tend to get as sick.
Right.
You know?
Kind of the immune system kind of is strengthened by positive attitudes, correct?
Right.
Yeah.
And I do believe in blessing things, you know, to be used for you a lot. The power of just a blessing is being a little part of the ceremony.
Right.
Just that realization that you're doing something special for yourself.
Exactly. Tell us about Wolf Moon Dance and Sun Bear.
Okay, now Wolf Moon Dance I don't know exactly what year that was, but I came across this, like, it wasn't online because it was definitely before then, but a kind of a correspondence course with her using tapes, and it was called the Sacred Voices, the Native American Council of Protected Words. And through these tapes, and she would have you listen to a part of the tape and then write your reflections and then send them to her, and, you know, and it was as much as you wanted to do, you know, as much as you could get into it. And through that, I learned so much about the effects of ceremony, you know, which we were just talking about, and prayer, you know, she would talk about, like, when someone was really sick, they used to send them out on, and to tie prayers with little red cloths and tobacco. And an incredible number of these prayers, you know, not just like five prayers, but like 1,000 prayers, and hang them on the trees for the deer. But by doing that, you would set your mind up to be healed. And just to, once again, the power of thought and the power of your mind to change your life.
And so would that be the people who were sick did that, or people who were praying for the people
send them
who
out
were sick?
Prayers. And
that's amazing.
And so that, you know, you would end up getting better by the fact that you were just doing this, and you thought you were doing these things, and by doing them you were getting better. So it was just the thought making the realization, around and around again.
Yeah. Wow, that's interesting.
But I learned a lot from that course. As I said, I learned a lot about ceremony. She taught with a lot of humor and things, and
I wonder if she's still living today.
That I don't know. She was in her late 50s at that time, and I'm saying it had to be probably close to 20 years ago. Maybe not quite that far, but probably 20. As I said, it wasn't an online course.
Probably it was before the days of online courses.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Now, as far as Sun Bear goes, back in the during the time when I lived in Geneseo, south of Rochester, and would go up to this Herbalife store, Sun Bear came into Rochester for a workshop. I'm going to step back a little bit in time. There was a time when Native Americans were really upset that they thought that people were trying to steal their culture.
Right. Right.
And at that time, I was kind of involved in maybe stealing their culture. I don't know. I just felt an affinity for the earth. And in fact, that's probably why I ended up with the Essene, because that had that affinity for the earth, and I wasn't stealing the Native American culture. But anyway, Sun Bear came into Rochester, and he said that the elders had said that it was time to teach the Caucasians to not worship the earth, but to be a part of the earth, to once again become one with the earth rather than to fight, you know, to exploit the earth.
Right.
And so through Sun Bear, I got one of his books, and it was all about the medicine wheel, which I have built one.
Yeah.
In the back of my property now, and it's a serves the same purpose as kind of a labyrinth.
Mm-hmm.
Only it's based on the four directions, and it's a movement of time through the year, with stones indicating the different. Well, actually, they end up being almost zodiac signs, but not they're different than the zodiac. They're more animal lunations, moons, I would say.
Yes.
So I go out there often to meditate and to walk around and just to try to ground myself.
Right.
Especially if I've had a hard week or a hard day. It's amazing once you put yourself into that, which goes right back to the thought process, into a different walk.
Wavelength. Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's become a great comfort to me.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Yeah, and so anyway, he taught us a lot about, you know, the Native American traditional path, and he was there for a weekend. And I don't know if he's still alive, because he was quite old at that point. The thing I didn't like was he showed us how to kill and skin a rabbit, which...
Oh, jeez.
But I guess
that... Did he do it kind of with reverence, or...?
Oh, yes, it was done with reverence,
yes.
But, you know, being a vegetarian at that time, it was kind of...
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, it was not the greatest thing for me to experience.
Right. I would have a hard time with that, too.
Yeah. But
And then you also studied yoga?
Yeah, I did study yoga. I still do some yoga, but I read in the local paper that there was this person named Yogi Pranabhavananda here locally. And I said, well, that would make a wonderful interview for Olive Trees. And so I called him up and I interviewed him. And after I interviewed him, I decided to take a course with him at the college. And the things that I learned about yoga from him, from the interview, even more than the course, because was that yoga isn't just about your body, you know. It was to tune the body as if it was a musical instrument, and by like different ways of getting rid of waste, like through respiration, urination, defecation, perspiration, expectoration. You know, those that you wouldn't think about as part of the yoga routine, but he was all into the purification of the body and getting it in tune. And another thing that he taught was the four paths of yoga, which I thought yoga, Tony and I had been doing yoga since when we lived south of Rochester. We decided when we moved there that we would start doing different things, and so we got a book, and we're doing the yoga exercises, but I didn't realize how much other realms that yoga, well, he says yoga is life, but, I mean, so that's pretty all-encompassing. But there was four paths of yoga, which I found, you know, kind of fascinating. The first was the path of action, which was doing work while asking nothing in return.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds very Hinduish to me.
Yeah, he says a lot of people, you know, like they do things, but they have to have all the publicity in the world that they put the money towards this playground, and so it's going to be their name, you know, on that playground.
Yeah. Right,
you just do the work and just, you know, because you're supposed to do the work.
Right, without seeking a reward or some kind of a ego prestige or whatever from it, just do the work, do the duty.
Mm-hmm. The duty, right, the dharma, is I think that's
what
it is. And then the second one was the path of devotion, which was interesting because it was the surrender to God or to the force that's around us. And he did this analogy about the young monkey compared to the young cat. And he said that the young monkey always feels like he has to cling to the mother. And so if he ever loses his grip, he'll fall to the ground and probably die.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the young cat just waits there, surrendered to the mother's will, and just waits for the mother to pick the cat up and take him where he's got to go, and just to be totally acceptance, to be carried by the cat, you know?
Yeah.
Devotion to surrender to the mother cat.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second or third path was the path of knowledge, and that's where you study what holy people that went before did. and you analyze what is real and what is unreal. Like, in other words, your car, although it's made of things, isn't really you.
Right.
It's just something, a material possession.
Right.
And you have to look at your life, your lifetime, because I think reincarnation plays a big role in this. And the questions that he said you need to ask in your lifetime is, did you gain anything from it? Did you gain any knowledge that you can take when you go? And did you do anything good? And did you make any progress? And those are things that he says you need to ask yourself all the while, and that keeps you on this path of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fourth path was the path of realization. And that's when you really try to begin to know yourself and to know your body and to know who we are in relationship to ourselves, the people around us, and our planet.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So that was quite interesting, and I still see him around, although I haven't seen him much this winter, so he might have went south, I don't know, or something to a more favorable climate, or just staying in because it's so cold here this year. But,
yeah.
I mean, he was fairly old when I took it, but he was in his 60s, and he could still climb a rope upside down.
Oh, my gosh.
Which I have never able to climb a rope right side up.
I know. Well, that comes for me too, Ron. Wow, it's incredible.
Yes, yeah, he's quite a man. I enjoyed him a great deal.
Wow.
Do when I see him, he makes my heart feel good when I see him.
Yes,
oh,
I can.
Oh, Ron, how are you?
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Ron, I'd like to talk a lot about the drumming circle ceremonies, because I know myself they have had such a deep impact on me, and I was just wondering if you'd be willing to talk a little bit about, when you do these drumming circles, what is the, can you kind of put into words kind of the meaning of this ceremony? What is the kind of purpose of it? What is to be experienced? If could you put it in your words? I know when I've gone to the drumming circles, I just feel a very deep sense of peace and connectedness to the people in the circle. But I was wondering if, from your perspective, how you would describe the experience.
Well, first of all, I like to have a ceremony of honor and respect that we kind of do at the beginning. And we do it with the burning of different herbs. We use sage, tobacco, sweet grass, cedar, osha root, for different to remind us of different things that we should try to remember in our lives. Like the osha root is for balance. That balance is something that we really need to have in our life in order to keep our body tuned. You know, if we go too far in any direction in anything that we do, that we tend to end up getting ill or getting angry or doing something else. So the balance is important. I use sage at the beginning to remind everyone that we're going to get rid of the negative feelings, that maybe you've had a bad day, you've had an argument with a spouse, whatever. We're going to get rid of that. We're going to clean the slate. And then I do a ceremony of honor for the different instruments, because, I mean, some of the instruments are made out of, you know, man-made materials, and I'm sure there's not a lot that we have to honor. Well, I guess they're all made from the earth, so
yeah.
I guess honor them. I mean, sometimes with the ones with the plastic heads, I say, and this is for the dinosaurs who made the oil.
Yeah.
But I mean, especially this the drums that have animal skins on them, because mm-hmm. we are using a part of a something that used to be a sentient being, and so I
right.
use tobacco to mm-hmm. to awake the drum, as it's called, mm-hmm. and to honor the animals we're feeding the drum, because tobacco in Native American culture is a sacred herb, and it's really funny because tobacco was burnt as prayers,
yeah,
and now people smoke cigarettes. So if you keep praying all the while, sometimes no one pays attention if you always got a cigarette in your mouth, you know. But I don't. But and so we have this ceremony of honor,
mm-hmm.
and then we begin try to begin with something simple, because. And we go around, we introduce each other to ourselves, and when we get around the whole circle, then we're complete and we become one. We're sitting in circle where there's no one above us, no one below us. We're all equal.
Mm-hmm.
And then the drumming starts, and it tends to take us to different places. Our mutual friend Joyce was talking to me this morning about how she seemed to be going in and out of alpha state during the drum circle mm-hmm. last Friday, mm-hmm. and how really nice that it was.
Yes.
To be that way. And then at the end, we have a little bit of a closing ceremony where we do some grounding, and we thank the earth and the sky with rattles and drums, and that's just really special to me, that part of the ceremony.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. Well, Ron, if our listeners would be interested in attending one of your drumming circles, could you tell them where they're located and when?
Okay, we do the fourth Friday of each month at the center. That's 1 Hoffman Street in Auburn, New York. It's from 6:30 to 8. There's a $10 donation requested, but I've always felt that if you don't have the money and you really, really want to do a drum circle, don't let that stop you. Just come and be with us, and don't let the fact that you might not have, money dissuade you from coming, because it's not about the money.
Right.
It's about the being a part of this, being a part of everything. You know, it's not about the money.
That's right. That's right.
Okay.
Well, the other thing I wanted to know about, maybe you could pass the word along to our listeners, is about your band gigs.
Okay.
I know that you're in some bands, and they play in various venues around the Central New York and Finger Lakes area. Could you tell us something about the bands you're in now and where you play?
Okay, currently I play with 3 different groups, per se. One of the groups is with my friend Dan Cleveland. It's most of the time a duet, but we do have a St. Patrick's Day job coming up at the Blue Water Restaurant and Grill in Skinny Atlas on St. Patrick's Day, March 17th, and we call ourselves for that gig. We have our bass player Mike Doyle. That's the Commentators.
So not commentators, but common taters.
Taters, like okay. The ordinary potatoes. But
okay. All right.
And so we're playing there. We haven't played in this format with the 3 of us in probably a couple of years. But it's kind of a reunion thing that bands do occasionally.
Yeah.
The other group that I have, and this is an experiment in saying yes. My friend Dan was in San Francisco, and I had booked a job at the Psychic Fair in Auburn. And so I asked people at my drum circle if they wanted to back me up, because I didn't know what kind of crowd that was going to be there, and I felt kind of intimidated to play by myself. So I took the songs that I had written with the word spirit in them or something like that. And so we practiced those with people from my drum circle. And then there's these two other fellas that kept running into me. They said, well, we got to get together and play sometime. We never did. So I asked them, and everyone said yes. And so the flock of free-range children have been playing around for about 3 years now. And it's an experimental band, a lot of percussion, and we invite the audience to participate with us in a lot of our different gigs. And we're playing at the Finger Lakes Artist Cooperative on Genesee Street in Auburn on the 4th of April.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so for a First Friday event. And then occasionally I play with a friend, Bob Lina, in different variations of his band. You know, with Bob, you never know who's going to be in the band until you show up that day. Played in Liverpool, and there was seven people on the stage, one whom I've never even played with before. It worked out well.
Oh, that's good. And I also remember you played with Merry Mischief.
I haven't played with them in a good long time.
But you did do some recording with them, didn't you?
Right. I think I'm on their first three CDs.
Great. Do they have a website where you could purchase some the?
Yes, it's. I think it's merrymischief.com.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's. Or let's see. I have a Mystic MR, but I've got this one, but it might be old. I think it's merrymischief.com.
Yeah, maybe if you just Googled Merry Mischief, you could.
Oh, I'm sure if you did, that would come up.
Yeah. Well, Ron, in addition to these musical outlets that you have, you also are really kind of passionate about your work with persons with different abilities, especially children, where you kind of do a musical workshop with Freedom Recreational Services, which is a locally based service for these children? And are there any adults involved as well?
Actually, it's to the you can go to Freedom Recreational Services until you're 21. And so, but they have counselors. And with Bob Linen, the fellow I talked about before, and Richard Curry, who plays washtub bass, comes up from North Carolina, where he lives, every year just to attend this camp. So you know it's got to be special. And we do 4 weeks. We do one day a week, and the children come down. And usually they have themes that we try to work on, but we try to get them involved in actually playing instruments. We don't just play for them while they sit there. Different songs. I actually ended up getting most of my instruments for the drum circles by buying things for the buying things to use at the camp. They could play them, and so most of my instruments have been child tested for safety and durability.
That's great.
But it's a wonderful thing to see. People, these children's eyes light up when they realize they can make music. A lot of them never even probably thought anything about doing that.
Right.
You know, a lot of times when you're a child with a different ability, you kind of get pigeonholed into what you can't do instead of what you do.
Yeah.
And it's just heartwarming, and you know, I just hope that I continue to do this for as long as I possibly can, and that they bring us back every year. We've been there, I think, since 1995. That's the oldest record I have of what our programs were on my computer, but it might have been the year before that. I'm not sure.
It's
a wonderful
great.
Organization, and I'm really proud to be a small part of that.
Oh, that's great, Ron. You've also worked to raise awareness of hunger and homelessness, too. How did you manage to do this?
Well, I haven't done a lot, I should say there's so much more that has to be done, so much more that can be done. You know, are you familiar with Maslow's triangle?
Oh, Maslow?
Yeah, it's
I remember his need hierarchy.
Yes, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. But the
okay.
basis is food, shelter, and I forgot what the other one is. And until those basic services are provided, so until people have those basic services, they can't be expected to do anything.
Right.
Raise themselves to the next level.
Right.
I mean, if you're hungry all the while, you're not going to be thinking about how I can take better care of the planet.
Right.
You
right.
know,
right.
You want a sandwich right. or whatever.
Right. right.
And so these basic needs have to be met before we can evolve as a civilization. I think it was it Gandhi? I mean, I could be totally wrong, said that you can tell a civilization by how they treat the least of their people or something. I'm not
right.
sure if it was him or not, but someone said something like that.
Yes,
those things have to be taken care of in some ways. I don't know what the real answer is as far as that goes. I mean, people complain that poor people don't work, but the same people that complain that they don't work are the people that have sent the jobs that a lot of people could do overseas because that way they could make more money if they send things out of the country and bring them back. And
right.
And then they complain that they have to pay taxes to support the people that no longer have jobs or the ability to get jobs.
Yeah.
I've done a couple of benefits. We did stone soup for a couple of years where we would have different people come in and play music. And during the afternoon, we brought in different soup and opened it up to the public for the people to be hungry. And then we had a donation thing and raffles and stuff like that. And the money that we raised went to the food bank of or the local food pantries. During the first Iraqi war, we had a group called the Hearts of Peace,
right.
and we did a program to kind of try to stop the war, but we weren't very effective at that. It still happened.
Well,
but we ended up doing a couple more Hearts of Peace, which did raise money that we did donate to the food pantries and things. So, you know, I've done a little bit of that, you know, benefits to raise money for the local food pantries.
That's great. You know, Ron, I can hardly believe it, but we're almost out of time, and I wanted to get into so many more things, especially like olive trees, talking about olive trees, and if any of the listeners would be interested in receiving a copy of Olive Trees or submitting their work to be considered for the publication, how would they go about doing that?
Yeah, I have a website now. It's ronvanostrand.com, and that's ronvanostrand.com. And you can, if you go to that website, you can get, you know, the different ways to contact me, the address that you can send things into or to get a copy. So that's probably the easiest way to do it. I could give you my address, but that's probably, you know, people be scrambling for pencils and stuff.
Yeah, the website is a great source.
Right.
I mean, that's great. So I just wanted to conclude talking a little bit about the Green Party and maybe your vision for a better world.
Yeah, back in the 80s, I came upon something, I think it was in a Mother Earth News, where the Green Committees of Correspondence was forming. And so I ended up writing, and they sent me back the 10 green values, which I found an affinity for immediately, and the ecological wisdom, grassroots democracy, personal and social responsibility, nonviolence, decentralization of government, community-based economics, post-patriarchal values, respect for diversity and global responsibility, and future focus. And, you know, those were all the things I believed in, so I became fairly well involved with the Green movement at that time. It wasn't even a party. And Brent Lanny had the first Green convention in New York State right here in Auburn.
Oh, that's awesome. That is great. Well, Ron, we only have a few minutes left, and I was wondering if we could possibly end with one of your poems.
Okay, I did pick one out. I was fairly ill for a while a few years back, and during one of the part when I started making a recovery, I wrote this, and it's called For the Wood, the Earth, and the Love of the People. And it goes, my arms branch out seeking the sun. In the morning a new day's begun. And I sing this song till day is done. For the wood, the earth, and the love of the people. I look over creation from high on a hill. And send out my prayers for those that are ill. And in return my heart it does fill. Thoughts of the wood, the earth, and the love of the people. When darkness is nigh, I breathe in the last light. And it keeps me warm all through the night. And angels watch o'er me, and I'm kept in sight. Of the wood, the earth, and the love of the people. But there have been times when I've been so afraid, when I fretted over what others have said, and times I felt I'd rather be dead, but was saved by the wood, the earth, and the love of the people. So now, like a flower, it's time to bloom, far from the reaches of impending doom, bursting free from forces of gloom, immersed in the wood, the earth, and the love of the people.
Oh, that's beautiful, Ron.
Thank you, Beth.
I thank you so much for the generosity of spirit that you have given to the listeners this evening. And I, you know, pray that you continue your work with great strength and gusto. And again, I just want to say thank you so much for being on Your Turn to Speak.
Well, thank you for having me.
We are all one planet, all one people of Earth, all one planet.
You have been listening to Your Turn to Speak with host Beth Miller. Each week, Beth features guests whose important views are often overlooked in the mainstream dialogue. You can listen to this show again at freespiritbroadcasting.com. And be sure to tune in next Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern for another live, inspiring conversation on Your Turn to Speak.